Hello, and welcome to our third podcast for our pilgrimage of faith, heritage, and music. Today we will cover the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. Bach was such a towering figure in music history that one small podcast cannot do him justice. So I will devote two podcasts to Bach, covering his life with short musical examples from each of the positions he held in his life. The second podcast will look at selected works in more detail and his time in Leipzig. Christoph Wolff is the preeminent Bach scholar and has written extensively on Bach's life and work. Here is his opening paragraph from his article in the Grove Music Online. Bach was, quote, "the most important member of the family. His genius combined outstanding performing musicianship with supreme creative powers in which forceful and original inventiveness, technical mastery, and intellectual control are perfectly balanced. While it was the former capacity as a keyboard virtuoso that in his lifetime he acquired an almost legendary fame, it is the later virtues and accomplishments as a composer that by the end of his 18th century earned him a unique historical position. His musical language was distinctive and extraordinarily varied, drawing together and surmounting the techniques, the styles, and the general achievements of his own and earlier generations, and leading on to new perspectives which later ages have received and understood in a great variety of ways." Bach was born in Eisenach, a city we will visit, on March 21, 1685, to Johann Ambrosius and Maria Elizabeth. His baptism is recorded on March 23 in the register of the St. Georg Kirche in Eisenach. The baptismal bowl is still in use today and, of course, can be viewed. Bach's parents had 8 children, 5 of whom survived infancy. From 1692, he attended the Latinschule, as had Martin Luther, also an Eisenach boy. School records indicate that Bach missed several days of school, which testify to the upheaval of his domestic situation. He lost his mother when he was 9 years old, and his father less than a year later. Johann and his brother Jakob were taken in by their elder brother, Johann Christoph, who was 14 years older, and the organist at the neighboring town of Ohrdruf. He received musical training in school and to some extent from his brother, but was probably influenced more by his elder cousin, Johann Christoph of Eisenach, than his brother of the same name. Quoting John Elliott Gardner, "Johann Christoph of Eisenach was the most exciting and innovative musician in the musical landscape of Sebastian's early childhood, and the one most likely to have been responsible for the boy's first impression of organ music." According to the school register, Bach left Ohrdruf, quote, "for lack of board and lodging." Clearly, his older brother no longer had room for him. Elias Hröde, the cantor and director of the school in Ohrdruf, arranged for Johann and a friend to travel to Lüneburg and enroll in the school at the Michaeliskirche. Here he studied Orthodox Lutheranism, logic, rhetoric, Latin and Greek, arithmetic, history, geography, and German poetry. Organ study was with Georg Böhm, whose music has survived. Here is an example of Böhm's music, his prelude in C, as played by Harald Vogel on the historic Schnitger organ of 1686. The first minute or so is entirely a pedal solo for the feet only. Johann left Lunenburg around Easter of 1702. After visiting relatives in the area, he applied for and received his first real job, organist in the Bonifatiuskirche in Arnstadt. The year is 1703, and Bach is now 18 years old. A famous story comes from this period. Bach was upset that better musicians from the town did not attend his church. Instead, they went to other churches in the town. Further, he never had much patience with the semi-competent and was apt to alienate them by making offensive remarks. One result was his scuffle with J.S. Geiersbach. The scuffle resulted from Bach calling Geiersbach, quote, a nanny-goat bassoonist, or something equally insulting. Here is a description of the altercation between Bach and Geiersbach as told by John Elliott Gardiner. A few weeks pass, but the insult still rankles, and Geiersbach plots his revenge. On the evening of August 4th, 1705, he and five of his comrades, well-oiled after attending a christening party, sit waiting for Bach in the market square. Bach is on his way home from the castle. He passes the town hall where Geiersbach accosts him, with his stick in hand demanding an apology for the insult. Bach is caught completely unaware. Geiersbach strikes out and hits him full force in the face. Bach draws his sword in self-defense. The situation turns ugly, and there's a scuffle broken up by the intervention of other students. Eventually, Bach dusts himself down and continues on his way. Next day, he goes straight to the consistory and lodges a complaint. The clerk reports him as saying that since, quote, he did not deserve such treatment and was thus not safe on the street, he humbly requests that, quote, Geiersbach be duly punished, and that he, Bach, be given appropriate satisfaction and accorded respect by the others so that henceforth they would let him pass without abuse or attack. 10 days go by before Geiersbach is summoned to answer the allegations, together with two of his accomplices. He denies point blank attacking Bach, claiming that Bach had drawn his sword first and gone after him with it. Geiersbach has holes in his vest to prove it. 5 days later, Bach is told he must produce a witness. Meanwhile, he is admonished for calling Geiersbach a Zippelfagottist or a nannygoat bassoonist. Bach is unimpressed. He asks for 4 weeks' leave and sets off for Lübeck to hear the organist Dietrich Buxtehude. Here is an example of Buxtehude's organ music, his prelude in G minor, performed by yours truly on the organ of St. Barnabas Lutheran in Plymouth, Minnesota. Bach asked for 4 weeks' leave, and he stayed 3 months, returning to Arnstadt shortly before February 7, 1706. On February 21, the court asked Bach why he had been away for so long. His replies were unsatisfactory and barely civil. They next complained that his accompaniments to chorales were too elaborate for congregational singing, and relations did not improve. Bach applied for and received in February of 1707 the position of cantor at the St. Blasiuskirche in Mühlhausen. In July, he wrote one of his first cantatas, Aus die Tiefe rufe ich her zu dir, Out of the depths I cry, Lord, to thee. This is probably Bach's first cantata, and at age 22 shows a mastery already of this genre. The work was clearly intended for a penitential service, perhaps connected with a disastrous fire in the town on May 30th. It is a complete setting of Psalm 130. Here is a short excerpt of the opening movement. Listen for the repeated words, aus tiefer Not, out of the depths, and the mournful setting of the orchestra. On August 10, 1707, Bach's maternal uncle died and left him a sizable inheritance, thus facilitating his marriage to Maria Barbara on August 17, 1707. Around February 1708, Bach played before the reigning Duke of Weimar, Wilhelm Ernst, who offered him a post at his court. The salary was larger and was certainly an incentive for Bach to accept this post, as his wife was pregnant with their first child. His resignation letter has survived, and it is here that we learn of his desire for a, quote, well-regulated church music to the glory of God, not only for his own church, but also in the surrounding villages where the harmony was often, quote, better than that cultivated here. He accepted the post and was released from his position in Mühlhausen on June 26, 1708. In Weimar, Bach was appointed organist of the court. Bach wrote most of the organ works at Weimar, and the Duke took pleasure in his playing. In 1714, he was promoted to Concertmeister, or the director of music. He was now responsible for writing a cantata every 4 weeks. He had hoped to complete an annual cycle in 4 years, but this didn't happen. However, many fine cantatas come from this period, which I will detail in part two of my podcast. During his time in Weimar, Bach began working on his Orgelbüchlein, or the Little Organ Book. This collection will also be covered in more detail in the second podcast. His organ works fall into two basic categories, freely invented and chorale-based or hymn-based. Examples of freely invented are the Preludes and Fugues, which you heard at the beginning of the podcast, the famous Toccata in D minor. Here are two examples of organ works from the Weimar period. The first is a toccata, and the second is a choral prelude based on the hymn tune Wir glauben all in einen Gott, We All Believe in One True God. The choral prelude is a type of work which ornaments or embellishes the melody, while the counter melodies may paraphrase the tune. Bach's fame as a keyboard virtuoso grew while employed in Weimar. Late in 1717, Bach found himself in the city of Dresden. An unnamed court official persuaded him to challenge the French keyboard virtuoso Louis Marchand to a contest at the harpsichord. Once Marchand found out that Bach was to be his competitor, he ran away, and Bach was declared the winner. Before the contest, Bach had asked to be released from his post in Weimar. He applied for the Kapellmeister post in the court of Kirtan. Emboldened by the Marchand contest, Bach insisted on his release in such terms that the Duke in Weimar had him imprisoned from November 6th until his dismissal in disgrace on December 2nd. Now in Kirtan, Bach was under the supervision of Prince Leopold, a young man who, as Bach himself said, loved and understood music. The court chapel was Calvinist, not Lutheran, so no elaborate music was to be performed. As Kapellmeister and leader of the court orchestra, Bach was now free to compose some of his greatest orchestral works, the Brandenburg Concertos, the Sixth Orchestral Suites, concertos for violin, keyboard works such as the English and French suites. Here is a sample of the Brandenburg Concerto No. 2, which is also one of the most demanding trumpet parts in all of the literature. On a side note, the selection of music was included on the Voyager Golden Record, a phonograph record aboard the Voyager spacecraft launched in 1977. Around July 7 of 1720, Bach was in Carlsbad with the prince. During this brief time, his wife, Maria Barbara, suddenly died and was buried before Bach could return from his trip. Maria Barbara bore 7 children, 3 of whom died at an early age. She was 35 years old and left her husband with 4 children, all under the age of 12. During this very sad time, Bach was deeply engrossed in his work on the first 2 sets of the Well-Tempered Clavier. The first set was published in 1722, the second in 1742. The title refers to the 24 preludes and fugues in all of the major and minor keys, popularly known as the 48. It demonstrates the range of keys that becomes possible using what were then relatively modern methods of tuning or temperament. Here's a short example of the prelude in C sharp major. That's 7 sharps. Thank you. Such creative activities helped to heal the wound inflicted by Barbara's death and made Bach ready to face the necessity for establishing a new home. Remarrying after a very short lapse of time was the general custom in his family and in his time, and it proves Bach's deep attachment to Barbara that he waited 18 months before marrying 20-year-old Anna Magdalena Wilken. Their wedding took place on December 3rd, 1721, at the prince's own lodgings, which saved Bach some money. By 1722, Bach was probably feeling the need to return to church music, and thus began the long application process for the position in Leipzig. Several candidates applied and were considered. Bach was reluctantly chosen to serve as cantor of the Thomasschule. His job was to oversee the music in two churches, St. Thomas and St. Nicholas, teach Latin, which he hated, and supervise the school. It should be noted that he was their third choice, possibly due to the fact that Bach did not have a university degree. Can you think of the first and second choices? Bach stayed in Leipzig the rest of his life, 27 years. Since this is such an important part of his life and work, I will devote part two of my podcast to his time in Leipzig. As we leave Kirten and enter Leipzig, I leave you with the lute suite in G minor. The lute was a very popular instrument in the Renaissance, and it is curious that Bach would write such a splendid work for an instrument whose popularity was waning. Regardless of the reason, it is a beautiful work that deserves to be heard. Stay tuned for the second half of my podcast on J.S. Bach. Thank you for listening.